One of the scary things about being on medical leave is you have a lot of time to sit and reflect and think and sleep, and a lot of that's while you're on drugs. And one of the things that I'm facing is tomorrow I get to go have a CT scan of my spine or my neck, and that's to kind of verify the MRI that I already had and all the other stuff. So I've been having a lot of problems with pain and just the struggle in this past year with this whole thing with my neck and shoulder and arm and no grip strength and all this stuff. So I'm just kind of in a weird place. And I had gone to the doctor. He had ordered the CT scan. And then, of course, over the holidays, nobody calls you back. And then you finally get a hold of people, and my records weren't in the computer, you know, which is always scary. And so that makes me a little nervous because, you know, if the doctor is losing your records in the computer, you know, that's just not good. And one of the things that happened to me about 30 years ago is I had a, 25 years ago, that I had a CT scan, and they gave me contrast dye. And so that they could look at this scan so they could see it more clearly. And I had an allergic reaction to the contrast dye, and I coded. I died. I stopped breathing. So to have a CT scan is a little nerve-wracking for me. And then when they lose your records in the computer, you get a little nervous about their competency. And then they called me yesterday to say, Monday, we'll have you in for the CT scan. And I said, okay, what time? And they said, 10:45. And I said, okay, great. And they said, but we need you to be here at 9:45. And I said, well, why do you need me to be here at 9:45? And they said, well, we have to start the IV. Start the IV for what? For the contrast dye, so that we can get a good look at your neck. Wait, I'm allergic to contrast dye. I coded, I stopped breathing, I really don't. No, the doctor's order's pretty clear. It says with, okay, people, hello, you know. So now I'm facing the CT scan tomorrow, and, you know, that's not even the surgery on the neck yet, and I'm already afraid, you know. I'm already nervous. Because one of the things that I want in this world is to be safe. You know, I want safety. Safety is important to me, and I think it's all of us have that idea that we need to be safe. And tonight I want to look at Psalm chapter 4. And Psalms 4 is written while David is dealing with his son Absalom. David is king of Israel. He is ruling Israel. Been doing that for a long time, and he has many sons by several different wives, and one of the sons, Absalom, has rebelled against his father and has tried to kill his father and has gone to war with his dad. And so he's terrified of his son and what his son is doing, and he's kind of fleeing Jerusalem, and David is trying to deal with his own fear, and also kind of chastising the people who are deserting him and who are looking to Absalom to be their new hero. And so he writes this psalm, and it says, "Answer me when I call to you, O my righteous God. Give me relief from my distress. Be merciful to me and hear my prayer. How long, O men, will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love delusions and seek false gods? Know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call to him. In your anger, do not sin. When you are on your beds, search your hearts and be silent. Offer right sacrifices and trust in the Lord. Many are asking, who can show us any good? Let the light of your face shine upon us, O Lord. You have filled my heart with greater joy than when their grain and new wine abound. I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. You alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." The art of trusting God when everything appears to be disastrous, when everything is tough. One of the things that we'll do as we face this world around us is we'll create this demand to feel safe. We have an almost insatiable demand to feel safe. I want to feel safe. I do a lot of flying to various places, and one of the things that used to happen was I would know that my plane was going to leave at 10 o'clock, and this was when we lived in Phoenix, and at about, 9 o'clock, I would go, hey, I got to get to the airport, and I would rush to the airport, and I'd get there about 20 minutes before the plane took off, and I'd quick throw my luggage in the thing, and I'd race to the door, and just before they closed the door, I'd walk on the plane, and life was grand. Now, if I have to fly out, you got to leave the house 3 hours before, and you have to go stand in line, and you have to, because terrorists are incapable of lying, apparently, you have to tell them that you packed your own bag, and you took care of all that stuff, and then you have to stand in this line, and you have to be searched, and every once in a while they grab you out because you might be a terrorist, and they scan you with these things, and they investigate all your stuff as it goes through, and there's this incredible series of things for what? So that I will be safe, right? That's what I want. I want to be safe. So I will gladly give up my freedom at any time for that feeling of safety. So I get on the plane and I go, ah, now I'm safe. Now I'm safe. Everything's going to be okay, because nobody could get anything through all that stuff that we just went through. And then, of course, they run these little tests every once in a while, and you find out that these, people acting on behalf of the government, testing the security, let bomb-making materials go through and weapons go through, and all this other stuff happens, and so then you start feeling what? Uncomfortable again, unsafe. And we don't like that feeling. We hate that feeling of being unsafe. So we increase our demand, again, to feel safe. I always want to feel safe. One of the things that we do is even if we don't want safety for ourselves, we want safety for those we love, right? I want safety for Kathy. I want safety for my boys. I want safety for the village, for these kids that I love. And so what we do, right, we build safe places. We make our schools as safe as we can make them. We put fences up and bars, and we have guards, and we have security, and we have things that detect guns and metal and bombs, and we try to make people safe. And somehow in all that we forget that, maybe the security guard didn't take his meds that morning, and maybe he's the one that goes berserk, and now he's the one with weapons, right? And we can't get to him. We create all these things where we believe we're safe and we'll feel safe, but the truth is we're not safe. We're never safe. But we have that demand. We want to feel safe. And so when we have that demand, we will sacrifice freedom. One of the things that God calls us to in our walk with Him is to walk in freedom, to be free, to be able to go to any place, to be able to speak to any person, to be able to walk into any scary place and just walk there with courage. That's what freedom is. Freedom is to just be able to go and do and be and not have to worry at all about what might happen. So we will gladly, in our search, in our demand, in our requirement, our expectation that there has to be safety, we will give up our freedom. We will confine ourselves. We will put ourselves in tight places. We will put ourselves in comfortable places. We will do whatever it takes in giving up this freedom to just bounce onto an airplane at the last minute, for what? For perceived safety. For this belief that I'll be safe. I'll be okay if I let go of all my freedom. We'll sacrifice freedom. We will sacrifice relationship. Most of us are very comfortable sacrificing relationship with people, relationships, because we need to feel safe. Now, I'm not saying that we are safe. I'm saying that we'll feel safe. So we have a lot of broken relationships in our lives, lots of relationships that we declare to be unsafe relationships, or relationships that, and trust me when I tell you this, some of those relationships really are unsafe. Okay, it's not like they're not, but we will sacrifice relationships, and we will, if someone who we're in relationship with treats us badly and then someone else doesn't step in and protect us or doesn't do, then we start getting worried about that person, and then we get nervous about that person, and so we start cutting off more and more relationship out of fear, out of our fear that we'll not be safe. And safety is a high value. I want to be safe. I want to be safe so much that I'll gladly give up freedom and I'll gladly sacrifice relationship for that feeling of safety. One of the things that happens is when we have this demand to feel safe, according to Psalm 4, we turn God's glory to shame. God's glory is to protect you. God's glory is to hold you, to walk with you, to care for you, to provide for you, to touch your life. And we'll gladly give up that glory. We turn that to shame because we choose and say, no, we will protect ourselves. We will not take God's protection. We'll not take what he offers us. We'll do it ourselves. I will do it myself. One of the great things about my two children is Justin's first words were Dada, which was great, not Mama. And the second great thing about my kids was that Derek's first words were mine, right? Because he had to fight for what he got. He had to fight. It had to be his. And so one of his little phrases was, I can do it myself, right? And that's how we are. And it's not cute when we're, I mean, it really was cute when they were little kids, but when we get older, it's not so cute. We say, no, I'll do it myself. I will not allow myself to be vulnerable. I will not allow myself to be in this scary place. And so we turn God's glory to shame. Our demand to feel safe makes us delude ourselves. We will tell ourselves all kinds of lies. One of the lies we tell ourselves is that we get on a plane, we're safe. You're not safe. You just think you are. It feels that way for the moment. And so we delude ourselves, and we have this almost endless capacity to start believing that we're going to be okay. If I just surround myself, if I'm just in this comfortable place, if I just live here, if I don't have contact with this group of people, and if I don't ever do anything over here, and if I cross this line, then I'll be safe. We delude ourselves. One of the great things about being a kid when I grew up was that you got to play. We played out in the field in our neighborhood. If you said to other guys in the neighborhood, let's go to the field, everybody knew what you were talking about. You went to the field, and in the field there was, guess what? The tree, right? And so by the tree, you went to the field and you hung out under the tree. But then we also had the cave, which we hand dug, right? And out in the field, next to the tree, we dug a cave. And down in that cave, we made our own cave. And then we found some old tin, and we found, it probably had lead paint on it. And we had boards, and we kind of, you know, we made a clubhouse underground, which was so cool because no girls were allowed. And it was just a guys only, you know, clubhouse. And then we had broken bottles so that we stuck up all the broken bottles around so girls couldn't come in without getting cut, you know, and hurt. And so we had this great time in our clubhouse, and we felt perfectly safe. Now, I go look at the playgrounds at McDonald's, and I look at these playgrounds and all these, And there's this huge idea that somehow we can make a safe place for kids to play. It's not true. Kids get hurt just as much now, and they get sick, and they, you know, there's all kinds of, like those McDonald's things, you know, all kinds of horrible stuff that's found in those balls that you jump into, and the little slides that, you know, and all the diseases that are on those railings. And, you know, we think we're safe. We delude ourselves. Well, here now we have safe playgrounds. No, you don't. It's still not safe. It's just the perception of safety. We delude ourselves. Here's the big one. We'll turn to other gods. In this demand to feel safe, I will turn to other gods. I will always turn to other gods. I will turn to the god of money. If I just have enough money, then what? I'll be safe. If I get my pension plan, if I get a 401k plan, then I'll be okay. You know, when I have to have surgery on my neck, you know, what do I do? Well, I go ask Kathy about it, and she goes down to the hospital and she works there, she's a nurse, she talks to all the people in the neurology people, you know, all the people who work in the neurology department. They say, if you had to have surgery on your neck, who would you have do it? And they all say the same name. So what? Dr. Norton becomes a god to me, right? He's like, wow, he's the best. I'm going to go to the best surgeon in Tucson, the guy who lost my record so far, and who also has ordered a CAT scan with contrast dye, which is kind of scary, but you know, he's the best, you know, so I'm not sure who the worst is, but you know, this is the best. So what? I get nervous, right? I get nervous. Why? What happens is I turn to other gods. I make my own gods. Safety will be found if I get the right surgeon. Safety will be found if I go through the right procedures. Safety will be found if I have the right amount of money. We turn to other gods. It's kind of a thing that we do. We choose to have these other gods because they feel safe to us. They feel safe to us. We'll search for safety in what we have. You had a Christmas list, things you wanted for Christmas, and if I just have this stuff, then I'll feel okay. If I'm in my house surrounded by my stuff, I'll be okay. Steve Martin, the jerk, you know, if I just have my stuff, I've got my stuff, then I'm okay, right? I may be far from home, I may be hurting, I may be struggling, but I got my stuff. My stuff makes me feel good. It makes me feel comfortable. This demand to feel safety, to feel safe, makes me turn to stuff, things. Things that can't save me, things that can't help me, but somehow when I'm surrounded by them, I feel safe. So we declare certain spaces to be safe places. We declare certain buildings, our homes, where we're staying now, the friends that we stay with, we declare all that to be safe. We search for safety in what we have. If I just have enough stuff, then I'll be safe. I need more stuff. You know, Christmas, I got lots of stuff, but it wasn't all the stuff I needed to be safe. You know, if I just win the lottery, if I just do this, then I'll have enough stuff that I'll feel safe. We'll search for safety in our stuff. So what do we deal with this whole safety issue, this demand that we have, this expectation, this requirement that we have to be safe, to feel safe? Well, first of all, you get to ask for what you want. One of the things that I've come to believe is that I don't ask God a lot of times for what I really want and need. Like, I'm kind of ashamed to ask God. Like, I think I have to buck up and do it myself, and I have to take care of my own thing. I mean, that's part of the lie that Satan tells us, that to be safe, I just have to kind of take control of matters, and I have to take control of stuff. And so I don't ask for what I want. And God says in Psalm 4, you have this right. David doesn't feel like I feel, because he says to God, answer me. And he says it with an exclamation point. It's like, God, you owe me an explanation. I'm in a scary place. I'm in a dangerous place. I'm in a place where I'm terrified. I'm in a place where I'm not comfortable. I don't like this place. Answer me. Where are you? What's going on? Talk to me. That we have that right to say that to God. That you can continually ask God, what's going on? Answer me. Answer my questions. Answer my concerns. Answer my fears. Talk to me. Spend time with me. Hang out with me. Now, I know, you know, theologically, we're always saying, I wonder if the Spirit of God is present tonight. The Spirit of God is always present. When two or three are gathered together, Scripture says, then in my name, then I'm there in the midst. But you know what? We don't always feel that way. We don't always think that way. We don't think that God's here, that God's listening in, that God's surrounding us, that God's wrapped his arms around us, that he's here in our group, caring for us, loving us, responding to us. And we can say, answer me, God. I'm kind of scared about tomorrow. It makes me nervous. I don't like going to hospitals. I don't like having procedures. I'm kind of nervous about that. Talk to me about that, God. That we have the right to say, answer me. Why do I have to go through this? What are you trying to teach me? What's going on? Answer me. You can say, give me relief. Please, God, I need relief. I need to feel that relief. I need to feel that comfort. Give me relief. It's a hard prayer to pray. It's hard for us to simply say, God, right now I'm in a dangerous place, I'm in a scary place, and I want you to give me relief. Relief from my fear, relief from my terror, relief from a very real enemy. I want to tell you that we live in a dangerous world. I want to tell you that there are real dangers. There is real oppression. It wasn't just in David's head that Absalom was trying to kill him. Absalom was really trying to kill him. Absalom was really trying to overthrow him. It's real. Our dangers are real. They're absolutely real. I have to undergo a normal medical procedure tomorrow. For me, that could be dangerous. You know? So I can say, God, give me relief. Give me relief. Notice it's an exclamation point. Matter of fact, it's interesting when you read this psalm and you look at the Hebrew, it's all kind of this demand, right? Give me relief. Like you can say that to God, I need relief and I need it now. Now, I'm not saying that God is instantly going to come and take away your problem. I'm just saying you have the right to say that to him. You can say, be merciful to me. I want to tell you how much it meant to me when Eric said, Rod, take a break. You don't need to speak, and you don't need to meet with everybody, and you can just take a medical leave, and you can relax, and you can take your pain pills, and you can make it through the night, and you can not have to get up and meet with people, and you don't have to do all these things. Go rest. It's telling. It's wearing you out. It's physically, you're just not there. You're not present. You need to take a break. You know what? That was God being merciful to me. Through Eric, through you all, through that there's this incredible mercy that flows out of God. We can ask for that. We can say, God, be merciful to me. Do you understand the trouble I'm in? Do you understand that I'm in deep financial problems, I'm having horrible financial problems, or that, you know, I'm scared for my kids, or I'm terrified for people I love? Be merciful. By the way, mercy is not something you earn. You know, that's the mistake we always make, right? That I have mercy is something that I earn. If I'm good enough, then I get mercy. Yeah. You know, well, and by the way, the liar Satan will tell you that that's true. This past year, in September, I celebrated 10 years of being a pastor, of being ordained. I got ordained in the Christian Reformed Church 10 years ago, and it was kind of exciting. It was kind of a special day for me, a special moment to realize that for 10 years I've been ordained, and And so I was reflecting on that. So then when this comes up, it's like this medical leave, well, you know, Satan says, yeah, you know, it's just, they can, you know, people can afford to do that because you've been faithfully serving for 10 years, and so it's just kind of a deal thing. Mercy's not about a deal. Mercy is never about a deal. God doesn't make those kind of deals. When you need mercy, he gives you mercy. Mercy and grace just flow out of him. That's who he is. That's what he does. He gives you mercy when you don't deserve it. You say, well, I'm in this scary place because of all the stupid decisions I've made in the past. Yes, you are. Cool. That gives God a chance to be merciful, an opportunity to be merciful to you, to be kind to you, to give you a special gift, to just pour out love on you. That's what God does. That's why I love God so much. Because it's not about my deserving. It's not about how good a person I am. When David says, be merciful to me, I'm sure he's saying, you know, he's thinking back, you know, I was a lousy father, I was a distant father. He was. I should have dealt with that whole thing between my son and his sister when he raped his sister. I should have dealt with that differently. David's kicking himself around the block saying, I don't deserve mercy. Of course not. That's the point of mercy. That's the point of grace. You never deserve it. And the liar will tell you all the reasons why you shouldn't get it. And then you can say, God, be merciful to me. Not because I deserve it. Not because I even expect it or have any hope for it. Because I need it. Okay? Because I need mercy. Hear my prayer. Sometimes God seems so far away when we're struggling and when we're afraid and when we're in trouble and when we're feeling unsafe. God seems so distant. So David says, hear me. Listen. God, please listen. You have the right to say, God, listen to me. And then talk to him. Pour it all out. Here's what I did. Here's how I've messed it up. Here's how I hurt. Here's how I struggle. God wants to hear that. Hear my prayer. It's a legitimate prayer, a prayer that we can speak and say and need to. And I love this demand. Let your light shine on me. Let your light, God, let your light shine on me. I love the whole idea of God turning his face toward us. That's found so often in the Old Testament part of the Bible, that idea that God turns his face towards us, and then is what? His face shines on us. It glows on us. And that light is scary light, because that light reveals our sin. When we come face to face with the presence of God, it reveals our sin. It's kind of a terrifying light. It makes us feel pretty weak and pretty like nothing, like we're, and pretty terrifying. If God is just judgmental and mean and nasty, then it really is terrifying. But no, let your light shine on me also does this a beautiful thing where it kind of lets you see the path out. It lets you see the steps you can take to be safe, to walk with God, to know what's coming, to see what's around, so that God's face not only shines on us to reveal our sin, but God's face shines on us to show us where to walk, to where to put our foot down, how we can be okay. Real safety. Real safety comes when we know that God has set apart the godly for himself. If you're here tonight and you're a follower of God, however poorly or well you're doing that, you belong to him. He has set you apart for himself. You belong to him. He has said, this one's mine. This is mine. God sets us apart for himself. I think that's a beautiful picture. I just love that. That idea that God, in God, when real safety is going to be found, not in figuring out that I got to make it on my own and I got to somehow struggle through and I got to, you know, bite my lips and just plow on through. No, God has set apart the godly for himself. He set apart each of you for himself. That means he has special interests in you. He cares about what you do. He cares about how you think. He cares about what's happening to you. He cares about what you're afraid of. That's real. That can harm you. That can hurt you. Because he's set you apart. He's pulled you out of the crowd. He's pulled you out of the mess and the muck and the mire of your life. He's taking you out of that. He's pulling you out of that. That's what he does. To understand real safety, you have to know that he hears. You have to know it. Deep inside, you have to know that God hears you. That he really does hear you. That his ear, matter of fact, I love whenever this word comes up, it's really that God's bent down, right? It's the picture of like when I'm talking to Elliot and I have to bend down and listen to him because, you know, he's a kid and he jabbers and I have no idea what he's saying. So I have to like tilt in and listen carefully and then try to figure out what in the world he's saying. And then, you know, he wants me to read a book, and so I sit with him and read a book. It's that way that God hears me, that he's responding to me, that he's there, that he really does hear. It's so hard for us to get that picture of God because God is so inanimate and he's so huge and he's so distant and we do all those things to make him that, but I want you to, the next time that you're afraid and next time that you feel unsafe, I want you to think about the fact that God is leaning in. That he's leaning way down and that he's listening to you. That he hears you. Don't sin in your anger. One of the things that I realized yesterday when they told me that I needed to come an hour early to get the contrast dye was how angry I got. Why are you people stupid? Like, do you know that contrast dye can kill me? Like, are you ignorant? What happened to you? Like I just want to go off on them, right? I just want to go down there and you know, what were you thinking? What's wrong with your heads? People, this is my life, right? And it's easy to be angry in that moment. It's really easy to be angry, and it's also really easy to sin in that anger. And God's invitation to us and David's invitation that's written in the psalm is, don't sin in your anger. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be angry. When you are in unsafe places and you're in fearful places, anger is often a legitimate response. It's okay to be angry. The warning is, don't sin in your anger. And what's the major sin that we commit when we're angry? The major sin that we commit when we're angry is that we take control. Right? I'll fix this. I'll go find another surgeon, although you know, I've already been to three, so I really don't want to find a fourth. I'll go find somebody else who'll take care of me. I'll go find somebody else who does it right, who's got their office together, who understands me. I'll take care of it. Boy, I wish I had a dime for all the times I've said that in my life. I'll take care of it. I'll fix it. I'll make it work. I'll be responsible. I'll get us out of this unsafe place. And it goes right back to that demand, that perceived safety, that I'm owed safety, that somehow I have to be safe. Don't sin in your anger. David's invitation is to search your heart and be silent. Boy, this is tough. When you are terrified, to stop, to search out your heart. What's your heart telling you? What's going on in your heart? And simply be silent. I think sometimes when we feel unsafe, we start talking and we start filling the air with noise and we start filling our lives with you know, seeking advice and asking everybody, what should we do and what do I do about this and how do I solve this problem and how do I take care of this? And God's invitation is for us to be silent, to wait, to listen, to hear him. Often to hear God, you have to be quiet. God often speaks in whispers, not in loud voices. Matter of fact, most of the time, he whispers to us this way. Take a step over here. Come with me here. It's often very quiet. not loud. It's not thunderous. It doesn't get written on the wall, "Rod, thou shalt do this, and then thou shalt be okay." It doesn't happen that way. Very, very, very quiet. Offer right sacrifices. The sacrifice that you can offer is your brokenness, your fear. Scripture says that a broken and a contrite heart God does not despise, that's the sacrifice that he wants, that he longs for, that he wants from you. That's what he's calling for. That's what he's asking for. Offer your right sacrifices. Offer your fear to God. You want to understand safety and begin to understand real safety, offer the sacrifice of your fear. Sacrifice it. Lay it out there and just say, "God, I am terrified and I do not know what to do and I do not know how to get out of this situation and I'm scared." Offer it. "This is my sacrifice. I will do what you say. I will follow your rules. I will do whatever you ask of me. If that's what it takes, that's what I'll do." Offering those. And remember, this is the hardest thing to do when you're afraid. You know, remember that I was with you before, God's saying. I know one of the things that we often do is kind of tell that story about when Israel had to cross the sea. They're in this dangerous place where they're terrified and they're being pursued by enemies and the whole tribe steps into the river and somehow the sea parts and they get to the other side. And what do? They set up rocks. They set up a little remembrance, a place to remember. So that years later, when they walk by, they go, "Oh, yeah, here's the spot. Here's a spot where God took care of us." And they can tell their kids and their grandkids and their great-grandkids about this place where God took care of them. Remember that in your own life. You know what? I did code. I did stop breathing. I remember floating up to the ceiling, looking down at my body that was just kicking and had tore out all the constraints and things that they had tied around me, and there was these crash carts and doctors and nurses and all these people came pouring into the room and they filled me with glucose or whatever they fill you with and sugar water. Anyway, they started IVs and they were yelling and barking orders and giving me shots and you know, punching me in the chest and it was exciting, you know, because I kind of, and then I faded to black and I don't remember the rest of it, but when I came to, I was alive. I'm breathing. I'm walking here talking to you today. God brought me through it. So you know what? Even if they give me the contrast dye tomorrow, God's with me. Okay? I can remember that he's been with me in the past. I can think about all those times when he really did walk with me, when he really did care for me, when I could see it, feel it, taste it, touch it. That, yeah, it was scary, but I can remember what God has done. Some of you don't have that wonderful long life experience yet of having the beauty of knowing that God walks with you. But you know what? You're going to find it out. It's so gorgeous that God walks with you. He really is your safety. The last verse of this passage, Psalm 4, verse 8 says, "I will lie down and sleep in peace, for you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." I love that. You alone. We'll search everywhere. We'll look everywhere. We try to find safety in all the places we can't find it. You alone. And you alone. I will lie down and sleep. Tonight I can go home, take my meds, go to bed, and sleep with no fear about tomorrow. Because it's with God that I find safety. Not in the hands of a doctor, not in the competency of his staff, not in the wonderful things that hospitals can do, that in God alone is my safety. But there's a risk. Because we really do live in a dangerous world. I want to go back to that. The world has real danger in it. We have to be wise about that. if you are constantly being abused or mistreated or hurt or attacked, don't go there anymore. Stop that. Turn away from that. I'm not saying that relationships shouldn't be broken. Some should be. Some of them need to be, and they need to be quickly. And you need to be in, and look for and be cared for by a community that surrounds you in God's love. But there's still risk. There's real risk. The risk is I could suffer. One of the things that our demand is for perceived safety is that I do not want to suffer. The truth is you will suffer. John 16:33 says, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. Isn't that amazing? That is so amazing. In this world you will have trouble. Isn't that cool that Jesus promises us that in this world we will have trouble? That we will have things that terrify us. That we will be in places that are dangerous. In this world, you really will have trouble. It's not a safe place. It's never been. It's not going to be. There's no way to make it safe. I don't care how many guards you place around your house. I don't know how many times they check your luggage before you get on an airplane. It's not a safe world. But what does Jesus say? But take heart. Have courage. That's what that means. Take heart means to have courage. But go ahead and be courageous. Go ahead and be courageous, because you know what? Jesus says, I've overcome the world. I own it. It belongs to me. I can control it. I can fix it. I can change it. I can manipulate it. It's mine. It belongs to me. I've overcome the world. Jesus says that. That's a promise. He makes us two promises here. One is, you're going to have trouble. The other promise is, I'm going to be there with you. I've overcome it. I own it. It's mine. Don't worry about it. You know what? I could suffer tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen. I could suffer if I have surgery. There's all this fear, right? The fear that I could end up being paralyzed. I don't want to be paralyzed. That'd be horrible. I don't want people operating on my neck. I can't stand to be paralyzed. That would be awful. What would I do? How would I live? And the fear just like, and I make it all up in my head, and it just gets worse and worse and worse, right? Because I can paint. I have a really vivid imagination, and I can create amazing what ifs. And we all do that, don't we? Like, we create these what if scenarios. What if, you know, like, we already can't pay our bills, and then, you know, we're pregnant, and then we're going to have a kid, and then how are we going to pay our bills? What's going to happen? We can just keep adding more problems, right? Because that's how we think. That's how it happened. I remember a friend of mine, he was telling me that his mother had to go to kidney dialysis, and she had to be on it 6 hours every day. I said, man, she had to drive like 40 miles to the hospital and be on dialysis, and then drive 40 miles home, and she had to do that every day. And I said, man, I could never do that. And I remember my friend saying, God's not asking you to. He asked my mom to. And he's given my mom everything she needs to go to the hospital every day for 6 hours and drive home. He takes care of her. He's asking her to do it. He's not asking you to go through that. If he asked you to go through it, then he would give you what you needed to go through it. Yes, you will suffer in this world, and God will be there with you, and he will give you only what you can bear and no more. And when you believe that you can't bear it, he will be there, and he will give you the grace and the mercy that you need to make it through. What's the other risk? I could suffer. I could die. I could die. Tomorrow could be over. It could be the last day. The last day of rot on earth. I know that sounds pretty morose, and I really don't want to end a sermon this way. But you know what? I could die. Romans 14, verse 8, Paul says, if we live, we live to the Lord, and if we die, we die to the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. Isn't that awesome? Nothing that happens tomorrow or any other day in my future or your future or any of our futures, the worst that can happen is we die. Oh, well, if I live, I live to God. If I die, I die to God. It's all God. I'm with Him. His presence is for me. He's with me no matter what. In suffering and in death, it's no big deal. It's no big deal either way because God is with me. He loves me. If we live, we live. If we die, we die. We will suffer, and He'll be with us. Safety. God is not safe. When you walk with Him, He's scary. He really is scary. He will take you to places you can't imagine going. He will have you doing things you can't imagine doing. He will have you dealing with people you can't imagine having to ever deal with. God's idea of safety and our idea of safety are very different things. When He tells us about Psalm 4, verse 8, when He says, I will lie down and sleep in peace, David says, for You alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. That word safety is a really cool word. It's the fact of safety. Real security. Okay? And that's important. That God says He will actually keep you safe. That He will guard you. That He will provide the security for you. So it's a fact. But that same word in Hebrew also means the feeling of safety. That word trust. That God will give you the feeling of safety. See, a lot of times I know that I'm safe intellectually because God's with me. But I want to feel it when I'm facing scary things, when I'm terrified. And that's what God is offering us. As we walk more and more in communion with Him, as we spend our time with Him, as we learn to trust Him as our only source for safeness, He will give us that feeling that goes along with the reality that He protects us, that He cares for us. You know, we look at the book of the story of Daniel, and we say, well, Daniel, man, he was in the lion's den, and God closed the mouths of the lions, and they didn't eat him, and that story's in the Bible. It's a great story. You know, lions could kill you. You're put in the lion's den. God. So we always think, well, God, that's safety. Well, you know what? There's a lot of people who are in unsafe situations, and God doesn't close the lion's mouth. And they die. Or they're hurt. They're wounded. They suffer. And yet God is with them in all that. And there's no safer place to be than with God. Any comments? Any questions? Any thoughts? Ideas? Pushbacks? I will have it probably painted on. I'm going to paint it on my forehead tomorrow morning. Yes, allergic to contrast. But thanks for asking. I'm really not afraid. I mean, a little, but not a lot. It made me nervous. Any other questions, thoughts? Let's go to God in prayer. Father, we would be safe. So we find ways to do that ourselves. And we don't feel safe. Help us to understand that with You we truly are safe, whether we live or die, whether we suffer or struggle, whether people really do hurt us, whether danger comes, how it comes, and that you are our protector and our shield and our lover, and that your hands grasp us, and that you do not let go of those you love. In this new year, Father, keep us safe. In Jesus' name, amen.